Welcome to episode 65 of the Golf Talk Podcast. We now qualify for AARP benefits. This is Eric Barseski, and Jeff Smith is joining me this week from Washington. Hello.
Hello, Eric.
Get right to it here. Jonathan Bird, clever title here, soars to win at John Deere. Okay. So anyway.
Yeah, somebody was thinking.
Jonathan Bird overcame a several-shot deficit to beat Tim Clark, who at one point had a five-shot lead on Jonathan Bird. And I think he had a three- or four-shot lead several times throughout the round over the next competitor. But bad mistakes, bogeys at 15 and 17, 17 being a par five, kind of killed Tim Clark's chances. And Jonathan Bird played well, three, four birdies in the last five or six holes.
Yeah, he didn't feel like he had much of a chance at the turn. But then he obviously reeled off a few birdies, and Tim Clark kind of faltered to lose the event. So that's a great win for Jonathan Bird. I think he's a pretty classy guy, hard worker, sort of a, I don't know, unnoticed player on the PGA Tour. So it's a great win for him, and that'd be number three.
Right, and that makes him the winningest American player under the age of 30. He beats out Charles Howell III, who has two wins, a bunch of people who have one or zero.
Right, not exactly the guy that you thought we'd be having in this discussion maybe two or three years ago. You know, there's a few names there that probably would slip ahead of him.
No, Jonathan Bird, he moves up to 25th in President's Cup points, so it's not like he's necessarily in there. But really disappointing round for Tim Clark, because he had played in 15 straight majors and needed the win, it turns out, to go to Carnoustie. Will not be making the trip to Carnoustie, so he said he'd booked a room. I guess maybe he should give the room to Jonathan Bird, because Bird's got to fly over to across the pond. He's got to migrate.
Maybe they made a deal on the final green.
Maybe, you know, they were shaking hands and stuff. So good win for Jonathan Bird. Again, the winningest American under the age of 30, and only 54 wins behind Tiger Woods.
Yeah, just slightly back.
Phil Mickelson, dumbest golfer over the age of 30. I shouldn't say that. But Phil Mickelson gives one away again. Had a bleed, blew one way left. That's a push, block, fade, slice, whatever you want to call it for a left-handed golfer. Pushed one way left, bogeyed the last hole, and then pushed one into the reeds on the same hole again in the playoff to lose to Gregory Havre, the Frenchman. Yes, Phil Mickelson lost to a French guy in the Scottish Open at Loch Lomond the week, of course, before the British Open. What does this do for his chances and mentality going into Carnoustie? But I will note he was playing without the brace on his wrist.
Okay, yeah. I'm not so sure what it's going to do for his confidence. I mean, as I said, you know, Phil Mickelson seems like a guy who's just crazy enough to not really care. What strikes me about this whole situation is that, you know, we had Lefty prior to his wrist injury, which was just a short while ago, enjoying the smile of the media. Butch Harmon had just become his coach on an official basis, and he was on a tear. It is really reminiscent of the Phil Mickelson who was on his way to a four. Yeah, the Mickle Slam, sweeping the majors, and here we are again, kind of watching him lose it on the last hole.
And he said a long time ago, back when he won, did he win at Pebble Beach this year, I believe? Oh yeah, Wingfoot was out of his mind, he wasn't thinking about that, but his two wins this year, both Pebble Beach, he had a lead and was never really challenged, and again at the Players' Championship, after the 17th hole especially, had plenty of lead. I think he hit an iron or something off 18T, or, you know, played real safe, but the few times we've seen him now with a chance to win, he does something stupid. So I don't know that. I mean, final hole, one stroke lead. That's awfully reminiscent. What's he do? He blows it way left again.
Yeah,
so is that still a part, or is that it's a different situation than coming to the last hole with a three shot lead?
Yeah, it is a different situation. The thing that I think of now is obviously his wrist brace is off. So you think to yourself, well, you know, probably he's over that. The question in my mind would be, is he fully over that wrist injury? But it looked to me, I mean, with a swing like that it was more of a mental lapse than it was.
I don't know that he's actually over the wing foot thing. That may still be haunting him.
I think it's indicative of the way Phil Mickelson plays and has played for years and years. Obviously, I think he had a grander stage. Well, obviously, he did have a grander stage with that loss at the U.S. Open. And now that he has that kind of a stage, he is a multiple major winner. We expect a guy like this who's been there enough and who comes in with at least enough kind of outward confidence to be able to get it done on the last hole, especially when he knows that he's done this once before at the U.S. Open.
Just hit it a little further right, Phil. Just a little further right.
Just a tad.
Yeah. Keep it out of the reeds. In LPGA news, Sayuri Pak has pulled out her fifth win at the Jamie Farr Owens Corning Classic. She had to make a late charge. She was in lead after 36 and 54 holes, but Morgan Pressel overcame a three-shot deficit and aced the sixth hole on the final day, but then Sayuri Pak overcame the same three-shot deficit to win. So she previously won in 98, 99, 2001, 2003, she already has qualified. She had to play her 10th year on the LPGA Tour to make the Hall of Fame. I think she surpassed that mark by now, but so Sayuri Pak Soccer Hall of Fame golfer, gets her fifth win. Margaret Pressel, hey, dueling it out. I don't think she cried afterwards, so that's a positive.
That's a real victory for Pressel. Yeah, outstanding win for Sayre Puk. I mean, this gal has 24 victories. And she played a great weekend of golf. And so congratulations to her. She's an outstanding player. Someone, again, who I don't know that we really notice or we talk about a whole lot until she just, you know, wins again
on
the weekend.
Wins $195,000, which would be about fifth place at the John Deere, I think. So
something like that.
Congratulations. So I have a question for you, Jeff. Morgan Pressel made a hole in one, but she's not old enough to buy drinks. So she's still responsible for the tab?
Oh, I think she's...
Or does everybody get Gatorade or something?
You know, I'm not sure what a person's going to do in that situation, because obviously if, you know, someone gets caught buying booze for Morgan Pressel, that's not going to be so positive.
She could get penalized for the drug abuse policy the LPGA Tour has, right?
Definitely could, but I would think that her fellow players would probably hold it over her head. Like
Jeff is, of course, our resident expert on buying drinks after rounds, including a hole-in-one. Have a drink on us. We'll be right back after this message from Titleist. Stay tuned.
I'm working on making everything I look at
something new all the time.
Winning my first major.
Another green jacket.
I'm working on my signature.
Hitting it this close.
Just to the target.
Staying positive after every shot.
More wins.
More birdies.
More eagles.
Just having more fun.
Beating the rest of these guys.
I'm working on a bunch of stuff.
Thinking less. I'm not telling.
Even the world's best want to be better. That's why there's the new Pro V1 and Pro V1X.
In our forum topic of the week, we're going to take a look at all the pros that are departing Nike because of the ball. So we got Jason Gore, who left Nike
quite a while ago. A couple months ago.
A while back, because he hated their ball. You know, we think that Chris Couch might be in the same position.
He was caught playing a Titleist in competition. And, of course, Nike requires a head-to-toe kind of thing. You know, apparel, clubs, you know, everything. Tiger Woods gets a small exception for his putter.
Yeah, of course, we had kind of a snarky person on the site saying how great the Nike ball was and how crazy we were for endorsing Titleist and running Nike into the ground. That was Dave Koster's review of the Nike Platinum.
Yeah, so this makes Dave Koster on our review, which we'll link to, I believe, did not like the balls a lot. He said they still had a ways to go before he considered them a premium ball. I've never really liked them. Tiger Woods gets his own ball, so he's kind of... You know, he's going to set him aside. He's playing a different ball than anybody, so I'm sure he gets one that he likes. But yeah, Jason Gore has left Nike. Chris Couch has left Nike. I can't name a whole lot of Nike players that are having great years. KJ Choi is one of them. He's having a great year. Stuart Sink, we haven't seen him. Lucas Glover, we haven't seen him. Justin Leonard. I mean, a lot of these guys are around, but not really playing that great. And with a bunch of people leaving because of the ball specifically, it raises some questions about whether or not Nike's up to the challenge.
Well, I can't remember it now. I think it was about a year ago, 10 months, a year, maybe a year and change. And we were saying how many Nike players were winning and being successful. Of course, we've got KJ Choi. Tiger, he's got his own ball. By all accounts, it's much spinnier than one that Dave Koster reviewed. Right. But we were talking about how all these successful Nike players were there and Nike was surging. But of course, as Dave said, now I thought he gave a very fair review of that ball. His main gripe, which is a big one, was that it just was not as spinny as either the Pro V1 or Pro V1X. And neither of those top Nike balls really measured up to that standard. So.
Right. That'll be interesting to see how the trend tracks out. You know, I mean, two is not a trend, so we'll see how it goes. And I've got, of course, KJ Choi and Tiger Woods combined for 5 wins this year already, so I don't know. Maybe Tiger finds that he can't putt with it very well, so could have helped him out a couple times this year.
Yeah, no kidding.
We'll be right back.
At the tournament you're watching now,
more players trust Titleist.
More players trust Titleist.
Trust Titleist.
More players trust Titleist.
Than all other golf balls.
Than all other.
All other golf balls.
All other golf balls combined.
All other golf balls combined.
And welcome back. This week in our Beating Balls segment, we're starting off with news from last week. Tad Fujikawa, 16-year-old from Honolulu, Hawaii, has decided to turn pro. There must be something in the water. I mean, they're surrounded by it, so.
Yeah, everyone's turning pro in Hawaii.
I'm going to move there, but I'm over the age limit. I'm not a teenager anymore, but Played in the U.S. Open last year. Made the cut at the Sony Open, you know, his home course. He had the eagle the last hole to do it. Faded on the weekend, tied for 20th. Okay, but he made a cut in one event, and suddenly he's a pro.
Yeah, my initial reaction was one of disappointment. Obviously, Michelle Wee's gotten so much attention. I think everyone who's part of the Golf Talk podcast anyway is a little bit tired of that story. And so to see a guy who, I mean, it was so fun to watch Tad Fujikawa play in the Sony Open. I mean, he took all the attention away from the big Michelle Wee fiasco. He had some great shots, made some putts, and I really, really enjoyed that event. And then to see him turn pro.
He was fun to watch, too. He had some personality.
Had lots of personality. So to see him turn pro at age 16, I think, okay, you know, I hope that whatever happens, he's able to be low-key and to pace himself in such a way that he's not going to burn himself out. Because that is young. Yeah.
History's littered with guys that turn pro too young. Sean O'Hare may be the biggest success story of a guy that turned pro young. He was 17, but, you know, he's 24 or so now, and it's just now starting to have success. Uh-huh. So, you know, it took him a good 6 or 7 years.
Right.
Fujikawa is 16 now. This is where you burn out. Your expectations change. You have no expectations when you're a fun guy, being like, woohoo, I'm playing at a PGA Tour event in the Sony Open.
Yeah.
Now there are expectations. Now he has cuts to make. Now he has bills to pay. So, you know, it says he passed up $66,000 in earnings over the two events.
Well,
that's not a lot.
No, it's not. One of the things that I noticed, so this might be, we might put this into the most questionable quote of last week anyway. He says, I'm not in it for the money at all. I just want to play with the best players in the world. Well, I think, again, you know, that's, okay, maybe that's true. Who knows? But I think
he's not one of the
young
best players in the world. You know?
Well, these players ought to be attending college. They should. They're young. You could just go to school, get your degree.
High school.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's only 16. 16 is like a baby.
Right.
So he's, you know, he's got lots of years ahead of him. And just, boy, man, if you listen to this, Tad, take your time.
That's right. Your fellow Hawaii tour pros, Dean Wilson, said so as well. So big news when one of them speaks out against, you know, one of their own, so to speak. Carnoustie may not be so bad this year. This is our next story. The RNA was kind of, many, they won't admit it, but they were kind of embarrassed or they felt bad. Or 99 Open was a little tricked up, put it that way. So this year, some people are saying they may have gone too far in the other direction to make sure they don't get a repeat of that. And if the wind doesn't blow, it might be not necessarily easy, but much, much nicer. So what do you think?
Yeah, well, I just got a charge out of the opening paragraph here. Sergio Garcia crying in his mother's arms after an 89 in the first round. Fred Funk withdrawing after an 83. This, of course, was in 99. So we had, we had a bit of a bloodbath. Tiger Woods, in his most recent newsletter, was not exactly complimentary about this event. And, you know, I personally think they're taking if they actually are softening things up and making it a little easier, I have no criticism for that. I think they've got to kind of find their feet after that, bloodbath in 99. So I think it's going to turn out to be a classic British Open. Obviously, if the wind blows, there's not going to be any worries. It's going to be tough to score. It's going to be a classic British Open. So it's going to be a great, great venue, as it always is.
Unfortunately, Bobby Clampett is still doing the commentary. So, yeah.
It's going to be a treat.
Just enjoy the pictures coming at you. Don't turn the sound on. Last year, of course, Woody Austin has decided not to go to the British Open, along with Corey Pavin, who is going to defend his U.S. Bank Championship victory. Of course, the PGA Tour event that's played opposite the Open Championship. But Woody Austin is deciding to stay at home because he doesn't like that kind of golf.
I'm sorry. I didn't even think this was possible. When we saw this story, what was it, a week ago, this broke, it was a complete mystery to me. Why a guy, anyone, would choose not to play in any of the majors is a complete mystery to me. These, whether or not you like them or not, these are the best events. You want to get out there and test yourself. I forget it whether or not you, I mean, you know, someone was saying about Jeff Ogilvie's game, he's a high ball hitter, and so he's not, may not flourish over at the British Open. Big deal. Get out there, challenge yourself. All the greatest golfers have always played golf on this stage, and Woody Austin, I think you are a bonehead.
He whacked himself in the head with a putter too many times, people are saying. But, you know, I mean, I'm all for the whole independent contractors, but that doesn't mean I have to like it when it's rubbed in my face so much. Woody Austin probably lost a few fans in deciding to play the independent contractor card and stay home and, you know, earn some FedEx Cup points or God knows what his, you know, real reasoning is. I don't know. So. Finally here, your British Open prediction, Jeff.
My British Open prediction has to be Tiger Woods.
Okay, well then let's do our British Open predictions, not including Tiger Woods.
Okay, so
we both think he's going to three-peat, but let's pretend he doesn't exist.
So what you're telling me is let's pretend that Tiger Woods isn't there, and let's not.
Who do you think will finish second? Put it that way.
I'm gonna have to go with Jeff Ogilvy again.
Jeff Ogilvy.
You know, despite the fact that he is a high ball hitter, and some don't think he's gonna play very well, I think he's got the game for it, and he's reined in his terrible temper, and he'll be there real close towards the top this weekend.
All right, I am going to pick Ian Poulter.
Yo.
Just for the heck of it.
Because he's got the hair?
Because I don't think it's going to be anybody. Yeah, people are going to confuse his hair with the rough. He's going to be dodging balls all weekend now. I don't think that, you know, there's no more. Jim Furyk hasn't closed the squad out this year. Retief Goosen has vanished. Ernie Els has never come back from his injury. Phil Mickelson is a nutcase. Vijay Singh has been AWOL for a while now. I don't see any of the top guys doing much this week. So we dropped down to the second tier. And, you know, Luke Donald, for all the promise he's shown, hasn't done much. Justin Rose has flirted with leads in the majors for a while now. I don't think most of the classic American guys like Zach Johnson's or whatever are going to do that well. I think it's going to take someone that grew up, that either has creativity like Tiger Woods or that grew up playing that kind of golf. So,
And I would have to also say that another guy that you might say might come in third is Paddy Harrington. He won this year his nation's Open, the Irish Open. And so I think Paddy Harrington's another likely choice.
All right.
You think I'm crazy?
I think you had too many Lucky Charms for breakfast.
They are magically delicious, so.
They are. That about does it for episode 65, because it's past our bedtime. We're 60. Never mind. That was terrible. Murder, She Wrote's on. We got to go.
It is?
Oh, my gosh. Let's go. Okay, well, anyway, you can find our show notes online at thesandtrap.com on Wednesdays. Join our forum where you could create next week's forum topic of the week. What an illustrious honor that would be.
At thesandtrap.com.
Yeah, thesandtrap.com/forum. For Jeff, this is Eric saying, I'm looking forward to watching the British Open on Sunday, mostly, because there'll be very little Bobby Clampett. Thank you.
Hey, bye-bye. We'll see you next time.